Hey A1 fans, Andy here. We're going to Cisco Live and we can't wait to see you there. If we see you wearing an A1 or Cables to Cloud shirt at Cisco Live, we'll enter you in our giveaway that includes a bunch of cool prizes like an A1 branded Yeti cup and an OCG of your choice from our friends at Cisco Press. Don't have a shirt? No problem. Head to the link in our bio and grab yours today. See you soon.
This is the Art of Network Engineering podcast. In this podcast, we'll explore tools, technologies, and talented people. We aim to bring you information that will expand your skill sets and toolbox and share the stories of fellow network engineers.
And just like that, as time expires on the maintenance window, the engineers pull off the successful change in the final seconds. We now take you live to the data center to get the thoughts of lead engineer Barry Greg Peterson, or BGP as his teammates call him. Barry, you and your crew picked up the W this evening, but it did get a little dicey there at the end. Walk us through the window.
Well, you know, first off, got to hand it to the team. This was definitely a group effort. A lot of time and effort went into the change prep for this one. A lot of folks doubted us, of course, and some didn't even think we'd make it to the starting line tonight. Heck, even earlier this week, the approval board threw a lot of questions and concerns at us. But in the end, we got the nod to go ahead. During the window tonight, we obviously had a few things didn't go our way, but we were able to regroup at halftime and ultimately push this thing over the line. I'm sure, though, there's going to be an after-action report heading my way, but hey, we'll clean it up and come back even stronger next time.
Well, there you have it. The engineers came away with the win in what will likely be known as the change window of the year. We'll now cut over to the newest episode of The Art of Network Engineering, already in progress.
Fantastic. The first intro of 2022. Of course, you're not going to hear this until like mid-January, maybe even February at this point, but we'll see. I am AJ Murray at No Blinky Blinky. That was Andy at Andy Laptef. Andy, how you doing? Happy New Year, man.
Happy New Year. How did I do? It was my first time being in a Tim intro.
Well, other than saying shit right in the middle of it, I think you did pretty well.
I don't know if we're going to be able to recover from that.
I was hoping we're going to ignore that and edit it out, but I guess not.
Well, we can edit that out too. I don't know. That's fine. Dan can do an awful lot in post.
No. I'm well, AJ. We had a nice holiday, even though we were stuck at home. We made the most of it. It was nice having some family time. Work is getting real this week in my first official week at Juniper, and I'm learning a lot. I won't bore you with the details, but today was EVPN and VXLAN and Modi Protocol, BGP, and I don't know, man, and a bunch of other stuff. So yeah, I'm in over my head, but.
Hang on. Product manager. Tell them you're a product manager. You're like being an engineer over there. Andy, what do you do? Whatever they need, right?
Yeah, whatever they need, man. They told me to learn. I'm on the fabric automation team, right? Because obviously I'm Mr. Automation, so they hired me for my automation skills.
Oh, yeah. No, that makes sense. That makes sense.
So right now I'm trying to do my best to learn fabrics and overlays and data center design, which I'm not too strong on. But it's awesome. I love it. I'm learning. And
sounds really exciting.
Yeah, it's good, man. Thanks.
All right, Tim at Tim Bertino. How you doing, Tim?
AJ. You know, I usually don't say much at the beginning of these segments, but this... This week, it's a new year. I got some stuff I need to air. I need to get out in the open. And I'm going to start with Andy. All right. So Andy, I'm going to start this, you know, practically the same way I start every conversation with you. And it's, hey, don't take this the wrong way, but I'm really glad you started back working again. And the reason for that is when Andy was off those few weeks in between jobs, there was a ridiculous amount of barbecue pics going up on Twitter and in our chat and stuff. And I was so jealous there for a few weeks. I thought I was going to puke. So at least Andy's back working and I don't have to see the delicious food anymore. But that's the first thing. So Andy, you're off the hook now. But no, AJ, in all seriousness, things are going well. I took a break for a while myself on studying and that kind of thing. But now I'm back getting ready for the... Cisco Enterprise Design exam. So back to studying.
Very nice.
So
very nice.
Things are good. Holidays are good. Family's good. Yeah, the salad. The end salad.
Excellent. And last but not least, Mr. Dan. Howdy, Dan. At Howdy Packet on the Twitters.
Dan's New Year's resolution is to be more engaging on social media. So go follow Dan at Howdy Packet and you might see him tweet live.
I'm going to try. I every once in a while, you know, I'll pop out from under my social media rock and I'll start posting a few things. And then I usually go back under my social media rock and and hide for a while.
There was a big one. Dan actually recorded a video of himself in a reply on how to pronounce Worcestershire sauce.
Oh my God, yes, that's right.
Yeah.
I about fell over when I saw that pop up on my phone. That was, Dan, that was impressive.
Okay. I appreciate that.
more from Dan in 2022. Hopefully more pronunciation.
Yeah.
Put a little twang on that. How do you say that?
Yeah. Yeah.
And now it's time for some wins. Kicking it off this week from our Discord channel, a name we don't see very often on the winning channel. Adil Khan was promoted to public cloud engineer. Congratulations, Adil.
Yeah, it's good to see him finally get something done once in a while.
Finally.
That's excellent, Adil. You've been doing so much and seeing the amount of study and certification work you've been doing really continue to pay off professionally. That's really cool to see. Nice work.
Yeah, congrats. Yeah.
Still manages to be in the audience live stream and everything.
Oh man. At like 2 o'clock in the morning, his time zone too. Yeah. Like unbelievable. Next on the list is P. Allen 182, fellow co-host over at So You Wanna Be in IT, past the PCNSA, that is the Palo Alto Certified Network Systems Administrator or Security Administrator. I forget the exact acronym, but congrats.
Yeah, it was cool to see that win because I think I listened to one of their recent episodes and when they recorded it, he was going to take it within like a couple days. So,
okay.
Cool to see the pass.
Now, this next one, I have to send out a huge apology to because I have been saying this name incorrectly and they have gotten a bunch of wins. It's like for some reason, whenever I saw it, my eyes just saw Tata the Automator. And he hit me up on the side. He's like, hey, I've been meaning to tell you, you've been saying it wrong. It's Taha, the Automator. And I'm like, oh my gosh, how did I miss that? I'm so sorry. So Taha, the Automator, started their new position as a network engineer this past week. Congratulations.
Yay. Congrats. Very nice. With some really cool pictures too.
Oh yeah.
Kind of like, oh yeah, that was really cool.
Plugging stuff in and whiteboarding. It's awesome.
That was cool. Jared renewed their CCNP using CE credits, which oddly enough, we just had a conversation about. So that was really cool to see someone take advantage of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really glad Jared highlighted that too, because that I think was such a transformational change in Cisco certifications that they support that now. Yeah. So the fact that Jared pointed that out, that's how he got recerted. That was really cool.
Nittany CLI passed the data center ops. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. They didn't pass an exam there. They got a data center ops internship at AWS. Congratulations. That's right. They'll be starting this summer in the internship at AWS. Paid internship, too, I believe they said. Very cool.
Wow.
I can't even imagine what that's going to be like. That's got to be something else.
Yeah. It's like the data center of all data centers, right?
Yeah.
The ultimate data center.
Chris Miles passed the Azure Network Engineer exam. Congratulations.
Yay. Congrats.
River, our friend from down under, completed the Terraform Associate exam. I didn't know Terraform had an exam certification program, so that's really cool.
Hey, if there's something out there to be found, River is going to find it and complete it. Nice work, River.
Dale Wheeler started their first role in IT as an IT support specialist. Congratulations, Dale.
Love to see those.
That's awesome. Yeah.
ELIGRP signed an offer letter to be a network engineer. Congratulations.
Very nice. Breaking in.
Yeah.
Jobs in IT, new network engineers. Oh, it warms my heart. Congratulations. That's awesome.
We got two new Patreons this week. Thank you so much to Padeep Patol and Kevin Myers for supporting everything we do here at the Art of Network Engineering. We appreciate all of our Patreons and all of our listeners for supporting us in the many ways you can. So thank you so much. And we want to remind everybody that our listener survey is still going on. We're still looking for feedback. So if you have any thoughts you want to share with us, any ideas for future episodes, you can go to the podcast notes for this episode, and there's a link in there. It's just a quick Google form. You don't have to give us your name. We don't want your contact info. We just want to know a little bit about you. How do you consume our content? When do you listen? How often you listen? What you do for fun? This kind of information helps us out with our sponsors. So take a few minutes and do that survey. Also, we've made it as a finalist to the Cisco IT Blog Awards. Voting is still going on. So you can also find a link for that in the show notes, as well as the description on YouTube. And vote for us. No, just kidding. I mean, please vote for us. But there's tons of awesome content creators on that ballot. So please go vote for your favorites. And you can vote for more than one. So, you know, give credit where credit is due. All right. Now back to the show. All right. I am so excited to welcome our guest. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. Duan Lightfoot. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. How you doing?
Hey, what's up, AJ? Tim, Dan, Andy. Thank you all for having me.
Thank you,
Duan. Yeah, thank you, awesome. Duan. This is, I'm meeting a celebrity.
Hey, right? I know. Like, I mean, Duan, you realize you're a celebrity, right? In the network engineering world. No, you are.
Not even. Shout out to everybody that's watching live, everybody in the chat. I think I don't consider myself a celebrity at all. You know, I've been blessed to help people share my journey and, you know, just make it off the help desk.
Awesome. Well, let's start with what do you do today? And then we'll kind of go back and we can understand how you got there.
Yeah. Oh, so my name is Duan Lightfoot. Today, I would say ex network engineer, ex system administrator, ex desktop support extraordinaire, and now I'm a senior cloud networking developer advocate at AWS.
Wow.
Wow. Mm.
That's a mouthful right there.
And I'm a father.
And we have a guest.
Yes.
Hey.
And a
father.
Hey, Kitty.
I don't think you could have timed that any better. That was awesome. Hello.
Hello.
Say hi.
Oh, this is so cool. All right.
You are adorable.
Bye-bye. Aww. Oh, that was cool.
Yeah. Looks like Dad is in the title too.
All the time.
It's up top, yeah.
That's awesome. That was so perfectly timed. So, developer advocate. I've certainly heard the title before, but what does a developer advocate do?
Yeah, so a lot of times, you know, developer advocates will be tied to marketing, but the true essence of a good developer advocate doesn't market a product. It's more so about empathy. You know, as a former network engineer, I know a lot of the pain points that we suffer dealing with a lot of products. I don't want to mention any because I don't want to talk about vendors specifically, but you know, there's a lot of times when we may have trouble with a device and let's say an interface flapping and we say, man, this device is always doing this and it's making my job very difficult. So I can relate to that. And so a part of being a developer advocate is telling the story and showing how whatever vendor you work for products can alleviate those pain points that engineers and developers may be having, or talking about a product that may be brand new that engineers and developers may have never known about, and introducing it with a story that's relatable to engineers and developers in the industry.
So connecting, like, what, you know, first sharing in the announcement of this new thing, and then why is this important? How is this going to help you as a network engineer?
Or developer, right.
Or developer, yeah. That's awesome. Gotcha. That's exciting.
So you're kind of like a bridge between the two, right?
Of course. We're a bridge between, oftentimes, between the business units and the customer.
Gotcha.
So how would you say you split your time? Is it pretty well 50-50 between customers and the internal business units, or how do you handle that?
Every job is going to be different. So when I was at a developer advocate for Cisco DevNet, a lot of my time was spent around with the customers because I was focused on Start Now, helping, you know, network engineers get started with network automation. So most of my time was around, you know, checking out you all's platform, checking out other engineers that are in the industry, seeing how they're managing their workflows, and then seeing, okay, are they adapting to network automation? How can I make this pathway into learning Python and different tool sets easier for a network engineer?
Okay. That sounds pretty cool though. I like the idea of that. Cause you know, in my day-to-day job, it would be nice to have someone like yourself show me how maybe this pain area in my world could be automated, or how I could use dev tools to make that a little easier. Yeah. Right. So I could see a lot of challenges with this role though. Like I'm just trying, it's running through my head right now, and I'm like, cause you really have to pay attention then, don't you, to what people are talking about on social media and stuff like that.
I want to jump on that, Dan, because Dewan, when you joined Cisco as a developer advocate, was that your first jump out of traditional IT network engineering?
Yeah. So yes, it was, but I actually didn't join Cisco to be a developer advocate. I actually joined to be like a content engineer. And
okay.
What happened was there was like some internal changes in the organization. And so when that change happened, they were like, hey, we want Dewan to be a developer advocate. And I just happened to get into that role. It wasn't something I actually sought out to do. And
okay.
Yeah, the rest
was that a surprise when you got, like, you were in there thinking you're going to create content, and then did they pop that on? You're like, hey, developer advocate, what's up?
Yeah, it was a total surprise because
yeah,
I think the last 2 years of my life has just been, I didn't plan for it. You know, oftentimes we work on certifications and we say, okay, this is what I want to be. I want to be a senior network engineer. Check. Architect. Check. Principal. Check. You want to go that path. But sometimes, you know, you say, oh, this is interesting. Let me see what this is. Like, Andy, you're in product marketing.
You're ringing all my bells right now. Yeah. This was never right. You got to stay open, right? And keep your eyes open and be courageous to take a risk. I mean, did you feel like that was a risk going from, you know, I'm a network engineer, I get certified, I climb the ladder, I'll be an architect, to that role at Cisco? I mean, did you feel it was risky at all?
No, I never felt it was risky. Okay. I look at network engineering as something I'm very passionate about, but I do look at it as something that to become a principal or to become an architect, it's kind of hard. And what I mean by that is because a lot of times when senior level engineers get in roles, they don't change jobs often. So those jobs don't come available often. So when I see an opportunity that may be interesting where I can learn and grow, to me, I'm more interested in that than having a title or, you know, something like that, a box that I want to check off my list. I'm more learning the latest technology and helping people. That's what I'm passionate about.
And did you have automation skills when you started the Cisco developer advocate role?
Yeah, that's a funny thing. So I started with network automation in 2018. I was working for a government agency, and I kind of told this story before, but my workload was like large. And what I mean by that, we had about 3,000 sites. And the first large task I had was to update the SNMP location on 300 devices. And I'm like, I get about 30 tickets a day. My workload was crazy. And so I'm like, I don't have time to SSH into all these devices. And at the time, my team lead was, shout out to Ron. Ron, if you're watching this, man, I love you, bro. But he's extremely bright, extremely smart. From Python to PowerShell, you name the language, he's automating it. And so he kind of introduced me to NetMiko. I was like, hey, why don't you try this out? And so I hopped on Greg Mueller on YouTube and I watched all of his videos, which to me, he's got the best NetMiko training out there and it's free. And so when I went through that, that got me started and I had that project done in like 2 days.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And so that's like part of the story. in that same role in 2019, January, the government shut down. And so I was a contractor time, and the contractor comes like, hey, we still want to pay you, but we can't just let you sit home. So we're going to send you to training. So they sent me to like a DevOps training. And so I go to this training and I get a DevOps Foundation certification. And that right there was what really probably the most valuable cert that I ever got was in that one training.
Mm. Wow. That's big to say right there.
Yeah, no kidding.
Why do you think it was so valuable? Because the skills you learned, or you mean in the market, like what that skill pays?
Just in the market at the time. Like, not saying it's more valuable than CCNA and CCNP. Like CCNA, hands down, that's upper echelon for my career. That is what started it off.
Okay, okay.
The CCNP Same. Got me paid, but learning DevOps changed everything.
Mm. Yeah. Okay.
So, not, were you the first looking for an opportunity to do that kind of training, like the DevOps stuff, or did when they presented it to you, was that when you were like, oh, well, yeah, like you just kind of turned on the light bulb on?
I had no clue. It was a free training. I just went.
Yeah, right. Right. You got to go to training if you want to keep getting paid, right? That's what they said. Yeah, like, we're shutting the government down. Yeah.
And I'm so, I'll take whatever training you want me to.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, three ways. What is this DevOps? Feedback loops, what I don't know.
That's cool. I'll figure it out.
And that's kind of a neat example too. I don't want to say like, you know, lemons and making lemonade, but like you're a contractor, I guess, right? The government shuts down. That couldn't have been a great feeling with a family you're supporting. Like you probably think you're going to stop getting paid, right?
You know what, man, it's funny how my life works out. When before the shutdown happened, I was already trying to get like a senior network engineer position with Cerner. And so I think it was before Christmas, they offered me the position. So I was getting the position, but they had a hiring freeze. So government shut down. I know I got another job during a hiring freeze. And I just kind of had to wait it out, which it all kind of worked out, because if I would have went to Cerner, I would have never got the DevOps training.
And that's what I mean. Like it works out at the time you're going through stuff, right? Yep. It's like, damn, this isn't good, but I mean, that class set you up probably for, you know, all this automation, you know, DevOps stuff. I wanted to ask you real quick before we move on. So like a developer advocate, as you're talking, I had to look up what a developer is. I mean, that's my starting point, right? So does that mean like a coder, a programmer? Is that what a developer is? Just another name for that?
Coding is at the foundation when you think of developer advocate. Now, what language it is, that's up to you. You know, for me, it's Python is my language, but coding is at the foundation of a developer advocate, and then DevOps builds on top of that. And from there, if you understand that, then you could be a developer advocate probably anywhere.
So are you going into company, like do developer advocates go in? So let's say you were in you're in your role now, and the Dewan of 2018, he's got 300 sites, he's got to update an SNMP. Are you presenting them like, hey, you could automate this quick. Like, I'm going to show you some Python. I mean, are you bringing tools to them to show them how DevOps can streamline and make them more efficient?
Are you saying as a developer advocate?
Yeah, as a developer advocate, like what's the job? Like what are you doing for them you know what I mean?
You kind of pick your medium.
Okay.
Whether you want to be on social media as far as YouTube, writing blog posts, going to different talks, going to conferences, delivering talks, whether it be on network automation, whether it be on a vendor tool set that you learn and how it can automate BGP or anything like that. So you kind of forecast, let's say for the next 3 months or 6 months, how your workflow is going to be, how much content, what are your deliverables going to be, you know, and then you have metrics on your deliverables. You know, to say, okay, I'm going to write a blog post on this. It got this many views. It's reaching these customers. And now once you start writing that content, once you start developing that content and going to them talks, you're also engaging with the customer to get that feedback, to go back to the business unit to say, hey, we have this tool or that where the customer is saying they haven't seen this problems, or the customer is saying that they see this need in their organizations. And so the BU will say, well, we can either update our tool, create a new tool, and deliver it that. And then once it's kind of like a continuous loop of getting feedback, putting in our content, bringing back feedback, and then delivering more content on the new items that are released.
Hey, A1 fans, AJ here for NetAlly. Never heard of NetAlly? Sure you have. They came from the same group of engineers that brought us network tools from Fluke Networks, NetScout, and now they're NetAlly. They know networking. I'm a network engineer for a partner, and when I go to customers and see they use NetAlly, I know it's going to be so much easier to troubleshoot issues we might run into. The name may have changed to NetAlly, but the way they build tools hasn't changed a bit. They ask, what would a network engineer want to help make their job faster and easier? And then they go build it, just like this Etherscope NXG. NetAlly is here to help. NetAlly, simplicity, visibility, collaboration. Visit NetAlly.com today. Now back to the show.
Now, Dwan, in your experience so far as a developer advocate, have you been given kind of free rein to figure out your own path and how you want to reach people and build relationships? Or have you found it's been structured by the given employer?
Most of the time it's kind of free rein. Now, you do, most employers you go to are going to have some type of like event where you got to engage, whether that be Cisco Live or some type of other event that you may have to speak, engage that way. But a lot of times you can pick out what talks you want to go to, blog posts that you want to deliver. And, you know, you work with your business units. If they got a new release coming out, you may have to create some content around that and deliver it at a talk or blog post or YouTube video or Twitch live stream webinar. There's so many ways to be an advocate. You know, some of the top ones is like a Kelsey Hightower. Not sure if you follow him, but I think he's a principal now at Google, but he's a well-known developer advocate. And if you listen to him talk, he's a great storyteller. Like, he's an excellent storyteller. And so a lot of that is, like I said, the empathy and meeting the customers where they are and helping them solve their problems, because network engineering is hard. And if I can make your job easier, look, it's a struggle. So if I can make your job easier, you know, that's what I want to do.
Now, you said the magic words a few minutes ago on Cisco Live. So the last Cisco Live that was virtual, you got the opportunity to handle it virtually. And I think we all saw some really cool pictures on social media of the behind the scenes of you setting it up. Was that challenging to deliver that?
It was challenging. It was challenging as ever, because like the day before something, I got like a script. And so there's certain times you got to like read certain things and you got to read it word for word. And it's like, yeah, I don't have this memorized. So I had to figure out, okay, let me put this note card up here to make sure I read this word for word. Yeah. So, yeah.
Going to need to invest in a teleprompter, right?
There you go.
I have one. If you,
oh, you do? Okay.
All right.
I bought it after the fact.
Hey, you live and learn, right? Yeah.
That's funny. Dwan, before we wander too far away from it, what was the YouTube channel that you used for the NetMiko training? I just want to jot that down and put that in the show notes.
Greg Mueller.
Greg Mueller.
Yeah, I wrote a blog post about it on my website.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. We'll grab that. We'll stick that in the show notes.
Yeah.
So AJ, should we go way back in time here and before Dwan became Mr. Developer Advocate?
Let's get in the time machine and go back and figure out how Dwan got into network engineering in the first place.
Yeah.
What was the thing that did it for you? What was the bug that bit you?
The bug that bit me, like, I've been in IT since the year 2000 when I joined the Air Force.
Okay.
And back when September 11th happened, I actually took my first like CCNA class. I was in.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And during that time, I didn't have a clue what the heck was going on. You know, I was probably like 19 years old and they're teaching me subnetting and it's just going over my head. But there was this guy named Pat and he was in the Air Force. He was like one of those, I would say, system administrators, just does everything. He knows SANs, he knows Windows server, he knows networking, he knows everything. And so I think he had his MCSA and then he got his CCNA, and a company paid him so much that he got out the military early because they paid him that much money. And I was
wow.
Yeah. And at that time I'm like, yo, I want to do that.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. I didn't do it until 13 years later, I didn't get into networking because in the military, you know, I did system administration. I did some network administration, but it's more like monitoring in HP OpenView and calling on alerts. And that's not really network engineering. You know, if you're working in the knock out there, I feel your pain. You know,
that's a tough spot for sure.
Yeah. You don't have too much access. You're looking at everything, you're calling, letting people know, but you just don't have access. So it makes it hard to really understand what's going on. Now, once I got out the military, I went to desk high support, did that for 6 years, and I struggled with that. Like, I couldn't figure it out. You know, I had all this military background. I had top secret security clearance. And you would assume that when you get out the military, you know, it's going to kind of be lined up for you for success in the public sector. But it wasn't like that. So I ended up going to a boot camp. And so in that boot camp, I got multiple certifications. And one of those certs was the CCNA. This was in 2013. And so from like 2014 is when I got my first network technician job. And the cool thing about that is that it was on like a manufacturing plant, ammunition manufacturing plant. We had about 40 buildings, but it was all flat. So all we had was like layer two and VTP. I got really good with understanding VTP and layer two.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Man. Imagine a broadcast domain that spans 40 acres. Like,
I'd rather not.
That sounds like a nightmare.
I don't want to, before you get any further, Dwan, I don't want to let this go. You got your first network technician. So getting your foot in the door networking job in 2014, and we're here in essentially the beginning of 2022, and you're on your second developer advocate job. 2014 was not that long ago. That's impressive.
Man, it's crazy. So from 2014, I was the network technician. 2013 to 2015, I was a network technician. 2016 to 2018, I was a system administrator. Like, I was a NOC lead in between there for like 3 months. I hated that. Like, NOC's just isn't for me.
Yeah.
Nothing against anybody works for a NOC, but I'm a real hands-on person. I don't really like just monitoring. I don't really understand the whole MSP model to where I can only do certain things. I can't do this, can't do that. I just want to fix it. Let me fix it. Yeah. You know, so I didn't really enjoy that. So I went back to the government, was a system administrator. And so from 2015 to 2018, I did that. And during that time, I had my CCNA. But while I was a system administrator, I got my CCNP, which was hard. And so the end of 2017, 2018, I started my YouTube channel as a system administrator. So I was still a system administrator at that time, talking about network engineering. That's one of the reasons I started, was because as I was working on my CCNA, CCNP, looking at training, there was nobody black that looked like me on social media, YouTube, none of these platforms. So I was like, you know what? I want to stay current on my network engineering skills, and I want to be a network engineer. So I'm going to put out content to help people, give back, and continue learning. And so 2018, I got my first networking engineer role. 2019, I got a senior network engineer role. And then 2020, I joined Cisco as a content engineer, became a developer advocate in 2021. And now I'm a senior developer advocate in 2022.
That's crazy.
Yeah, like, no big deal. It's easy.
So when did Lab Every Day start? 2017?
2018. Was that the official? So it was like
2018?
Yeah, it was 2018, the end of 2017, 2018.
How'd you come up with that? Like, just Lab Every Day. I mean, it's brilliant. It's simple. Everybody knows it. And you created it.
I used to rap. And so when I would rap, I was in the lab every day. And I just applied that same mindset
to
network engineering.
Oh, wow.
I hear
we should have let you do the intro and spit, man. Come on.
Dwan, what are you doing next Thursday? I want to jump on that too, because Andy said that you see that everywhere, which you do. And I've got kind of a funny story about that. So when before I was on the show, I was writing for the Art of Network Engineering website. And one of the first things I wrote, I was going through it with AJ. And when we write the articles, we throw in, you know, a tweet as well to go with them to kind of promote the article. So I got it ready and AJ looks at it and he goes, you know, this is okay, but you got to up your hashtag game here. You got to throw some stuff in there. He goes, put Lab Every Day in there. Everybody loves that. Everybody's going to see it. So Duan, I don't know if you found a way yet, but if you can monetize those hashtags, you wouldn't have to work another day in your life. That thing is everywhere.
You know, the monetization thing is funny because I never set out to monetize anything. Like, that was never my goal. My goal was to go as far as I can in my career and help people while I'm doing it. And so I believe I've been blessed throughout that, you know, and there is going to come a point where I won't have to work again. But until then, I'm going to keep working and keep learning and keep growing, you know, because I don't see too many people, you know, that understand the industry and know how to navigate it. And if I can figure that out and then give breadcrumbs along the way, that's what I want to do. And then, you know, do referrals and get other people in as well and network and build my network and help people. I mean, that's what I want to do. And then once that's done, then I won't work.
This might be a dumb question, but have you always had that mindset? I mean, do you feel like you've had that since growing up, that you've always wanted to help people, or was that something you picked up along the way when you got into IT?
No, I've always been that way.
That's awesome.
You know, I was homeless as a kid, you know. I come from a struggle. And so I think my struggle just kind of made me understand that there's always going to be someone that has less than you. And if you have a little bit more, you should give some.
I love that.
Isn't it amazing how struggle, especially when you're young, can kind of shape you and your adulthood? And it makes you realize, if you've never been homeless as a kid, I don't know what your experience was, but we spent about a week homeless as kids. Me and my mom, my sister were living in a hotel in Atlantic City. We had nowhere to go. And we wound up sleeping on my grandparents' floor for 6 months until, you know, my mom could get us somewhere. But I've heard you say that before, and I wasn't going to bring it up here because I didn't want to blast you like, hey man, what's it like to be homeless as a kid? Like, it's an asshole thing to ask, right? But because you brought it up and I had a similar experience, at least a little bit, it's amazing how that shaped me and how it's changed my, I don't know if it's why I work so hard and why I'm always climbing. Like, I never want my kids, you know, for a lot of different reasons, right? But I don't want my kids to have to experience some of the things I did. And, you know, I don't know if we're just born wanting to help other people and pull people up, but yes, having those kind of experiences definitely shaped me, right? To want to help people and to make sure that my kids don't have to experience that. And so anyway, I'm guessing that experience shaped your world outlook, right? And might have an impact on your decisions today. And is that why you're trying to help people? Because you've seen, you know what it's like, kind of thing?
Yeah, it's like three things. So that's one of them. The second one is my struggle from transitioning from the military and being on the help desk for 6 years and having no clue and not having the resources or the information to figure and navigate this industry, you know? And the third thing is when I was in Afghanistan, my tour over there just kind of changed the way I look at life, because you have people that, or let's say kids, for instance, that live in a situation that would be tough to live in, right? And they smile every day. And they lift you up. You know what I mean? So for me, it's like, always be thankful and help who you can.
It's incredible. Perspective is huge, right?
Yeah. Yep. That's it, Andy.
It's really everything. Anybody can wake up and bitch about, you know, my coffee's cold, or I mean, whatever, right? Like, just nonsense first world problems. But then you live through something like that in Afghanistan. Like, whoa, man, like I know some of the shit I've been through really makes me appreciate what I have today. Yep. You know what I mean? My house is warm. I got food on the table. My family's safe. Like, really? You know, what else is there? I can complain about anything, but, you know, my people are good.
Yeah.
That's it. And I want to say, I love, you know, I can't imagine what that's, a couple things you're saying, right? Like, I'm amazed. You're not the first person I've heard. Weiss comes to mind as somebody who talked about how hard it was transitioning from like military life to private life. And I always assumed, especially like the Air Force, right? That's usually like the smarter people, and they, you know, they get into technical stuff, or like, so like, I would think that all that experience when you get out, like you were saying earlier, you'd be poised and ready and prepared, and maybe they'd help you transit. I mean, how does a guy come out with a top secret clearance and he's like installing RAM in laptops? Or, I mean, I'm guessing in help desk, like I'm sure you were doing other stuff, but do they not? I guess the military doesn't really, is there no transitionary thing of like, hey, I don't know. Like, why was it so tough going from military to private life, I guess is what I'm trying to ask.
I think I got out in 2007 and it's gotten a lot better, but a lot of it is the lack of resources and the lack of information, you know, for me, that is, I didn't know, you know, like they have a transition program, helps you with your resume, helps you with your resume and kind of guides you and navigates you that way. When I got out,
Bless you.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. They kind of guide you and navigate you, you know, creating your resume and applying for jobs. But the thing about the military is that you work on a lot of proprietary technology. And so how do you transition that information and the things that your accomplishment to a technical resume for the public sector to say what you actually qualify for? And so if you don't know how to do that, it's going to be hard to say that you more than the things of, okay, I worked on Windows and I worked on Windows Server. And then I worked on this thing. I don't have no idea what this is in the public sector, but I know I supported Windows and I know I supported some servers. So at that point, if you're telling your resume like that, of course, you're not hitting those keywords. You're not going to get callbacks. You're only going to get callbacks at the level that your resume is prepared for.
Yeah. Yeah. You said something else too, that you didn't see anyone black talking about or teaching network engineering, and you wanted to get in that space and start. And I've always been in, I've been following your channel forever, and I've watched almost all the guests you've had, and I've really enjoyed everyone you've brought on. And, you know, I'm glad that you've been able to do what you've been doing. It's been really nice to see. I think it's important for everyone to see that there are different folks doing this job, right? Like most places I've worked have been rooms of like white dudes, like in tech. And it just, I'm not throwing a judgment at it or anything, but it's just been my experience in 14 years in tech. And there aren't enough, I hate to use underrepresented, you know, I'm not trying to like virtue signal, like, but like people that aren't white dudes, right? I think it's important to hear stories of folks like yourself and everybody you've had on your show. Like, this is their story. This is where they come from. These are their struggles. And this is what they're doing now, because it's important. We need, I think, to do better in general to include everyone. There's plenty of room for all of us. And I just appreciate what you've been doing for, you know, people that could use help from somebody like yourself. You have a platform and you have a voice and you have success. Like, thank goodness for people like you who are pulling people along with them. You know what I mean? Because you don't have to do that, and it takes time. It takes time out of your personal life, right? You sacrifice time, which is our most valuable asset, to help tell stories that need to be told, right? So I appreciate that, and I think that that's a real solid thing you've been doing with your time.
For sure. Thanks. Yeah, I think when it comes to technology, you know, I think a lot of it is the information and the opportunity that a lot of people don't know they have. We're all from different backgrounds, but if I told you about my background, I wasn't allowed to tinker. Technology wasn't something I was allowed to experiment with as a kid. And a lot of my peers were the same way. And so getting introduced to technology, you really don't get introduced to that until, you know, you're in your 20s or something like that, because you don't even know computer science is a thing in college, because, you know, okay, I'm gonna go to school for business administration or something like that. But technology was something that was never introduced. And so my focus is to really share my experience, share the information that I have, that I learn about, and then also help others do the same. Because, you know, if you can't see it, you can't be it. Right. You know, everything that was created, somebody had a vision or they saw it somewhere first. And so to be seen is inspiration, you know, for someone else. To be heard is inspiration for someone else, you know. So I try my best to just not only, you know, share my information, but use my platform to give others a voice as well.
And maybe for somebody younger who's trying to find their way and what do they want to do? And, you know, to see someone that looks like them and sounds like them that is doing this thing. Like you said, you didn't have those opportunities as a kid, but, you know, like the representation, like, okay, like there's Dwan and look what he's doing. And wow, maybe I could do that too, you know? So that's really solid.
Yeah.
And you're creating that now, right? So
my partner, Kaz, shout out to Kaz, but he was the first black CCNP that I knew. When I got my CCNA, he's the one that inspired me to get the CCNP because it's like, oh, he did it. I can do it too. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because I've always heard it was hard. It's three tests. I can't afford it. And it's going to take a lot of work. I don't think I can do this. But to see him do it and him telling me, man, you can do it. And that right there, you know, was everything. That helped me to get over the hump and put in the work, lab every day, and get my CCNP.
Yeah. And that's been the power of the community too, right? Like, at least for me, seeing other people, like hearing that failure is just sometimes a normal part of this thing and you fail an exam. Like, oh, okay. Every exam I failed and I failed a lot of them, they each made me feel like, well, I'm not smart enough to do this. Maybe I don't belong. Maybe I don't get to, you know, hang with these people. But the power of the community and, you know, yourself and all these guys and tech Twitter, whatever, hearing other people's experiences, like we're talking about, it helps normalize some of this stuff. Like, all right, people fail tests. No big deal. Get back up. It's going to be all right. You know, you have people lift you up when you do. So it's been pretty cool.
I think that's what it takes to be successful in tech. You know, it isn't about being smart. It's about having grit and, you know, kind of just figuring it out and willing to go however long it takes to figure it out and working with whoever you need to get the job done. You know what I mean? Because it's been plenty of times on most teams that I've been on, I wasn't the smartest person on the team, but nobody would question my work ethic. You know what I mean? So right. I think you got to find out in this industry, where can you add value? Because on a team, if you look at any network engineering team, there's so many different technology areas that you have to support, whether it be firewalls, whether it be routers, whether it be layer two switches, whether it be data center. And so there's a lane for you to find out, okay, this is what I'm interested in. Nobody's really want to support this. Nobody in my industry is really strong on this. Let me focus on this area right here and let me add value here. And then that's how you stand out. That's how you grow. In my opinion, that's been my experience.
I have to remember that I'm not watching the show, that I'm participating in it. This has been such a good conversation. I want to highlight, Dwan, your willingness to just jump in and help somebody, even personally. So it was the end of 2019. No, it was the end of 2020. I was actually looking at a developer advocate position at Cisco, and you had recently started there. And I reached out to you to just get some idea of like, hey, what's Cisco like? What's the DevNet team like? And you're like, man, give me a call. We'll talk about this. I'm like, really? Like, you're going to take time out of your day to talk to me on the phone? Like, you hardly know you through Twitter. So I've always appreciated that conversation. You shot real straight with me. And it was short, but it was a great conversation. You took the time to answer all of my questions. And I can't tell you how much I appreciated that, like, from the day. And it's just... it's awesome to see you, and it's inspiring to see you do that. And I've tried to pay that forward. If I see somebody struggling with something or they want to know something, I'll be like, hey, let's jump into WebEx and I'll show you how to do this. And, you know, I've given an Ansible demo to so many people because they had questions about Ansible and they saw my blog article. You know, I'm just trying to pass that same mojo forward. And I appreciate you for taking the time to do that for me.
For sure. For sure.
I have an automation question real quick. So,
oh boy, yeah. The episode's gonna take
yeah. So I got a question. You got kids now. So yeah. Was it hard for you to learn automation? Because I have had a hell of a time. Let me give you some context. I was a computer science major in college for about 15 minutes. Okay. They made me take programming and C++ and calculus my first semester, and both are just beyond my capability. And at that point, I thought, okay, I don't get to be in computer science. I don't get to be, you know, I guess I don't get to work with computers because I'm not smart enough. So fast forward all these years later, I'm a network engineer, and you're like, automate or die, right? You're going to be a dinosaur, bro, if you don't figure this stuff out. So I've been banging my head against it for, I don't know, two and a half years, you know, Python and Ansible and DevOps and even at work now, I'm learning Scrum and Agile and Swimlane. I mean, just, you know, software, everything's software now, right? So it seems to me, and maybe this isn't correct, but the network is becoming less and less important. And it's more like the network is just assumed, like, man, that just better work because, you know, this is all about the applications. So I guess the real question is, like, as a network engineer, when you had to start learning programmatic stuff, like, was it that boot camp and was it hard for you? Because I've been having a hell of a time. I mean, I'm getting there, but I keep bitching and moaning the whole time that it's just, it's so foreign to me. And I get if then statements, but man, you get me like 3-4 lines of no Python script. I'm like, wait, what? And what was the variable? Is that a dictionary? No, that might be a list. Is it a parenthesis? Is it a colon? Like all that syntax and keeping track of it. I'm just not there yet. So like, was it hard for you or did you just get it? Like you were just like, oh, this is easy.
Man, it's hard. I'm not even going to lie to you.
Yeah. Okay, good.
But I feel better.
It helps me. It helps me because it's hard for me.
What makes it hard is taking the traditional route and trying to go through tutorials and learning that way. Like, that's hard. Because they're teaching you to do the foundations, the basics of Python, and then you may build like a menu or you may do some simple network automation. But now it's like, okay, now what? You know, you got this thing that you can do and it's cool, but what did you learn from it? So what I found is that finding something that you're interested in automating that. Like, for instance, I push this button on my Stream Deck.
Ooh.
And it controls the lights. I wrote a Python script to do that. And so
really,
I'm going to take that same code and there's a thing called Arduino. Mm-hmm. It's a nano device, IoT device. And I'm going to make like a little push button remote on this Arduino to where all I got to do is use my Arduino to push the button to control the lights in my studio.
So wait a minute. How does a Python script control the lights in your studio? This is what blows my mind. Like, what? I mean, you wrote a Python script and what? Your Stream Deck tells your computer to run the script and then the script talks to your IP-enabled lights or something?
Yeah. So let's break it down. You diagram it out.
We're going to learn today, Andy.
my lights are Hue lights. So Hue lights expose an API. The API is an IP address that you communicate with GET and POST requests, right? And so from there, on my phone, I go through all the settings of the lights that I want. And I configure each setting that I want on the lights. I send a GET request to that IP address to get the settings. I store the settings in, let's say, a variable just to keep it simple, right? For each one. And then I modify my Python script to create functions to send a POST to that API to say, okay, I want my lights to be this setting. My next post is to change my light to this setting, right? And so I package up that Python script just by saving it as an executable. And then from there, I tell the Stream Deck to say, okay, every time I push this button, run this Python script. And so every time the Python script, it goes through an if statement to say, okay, if setting this, change it to this. If setting this, change it to this, and et cetera. And that's simple. That's like some basic automation. Now, when we think of a network engineer instance, when it came to, let's say, the updating the interfaces on or updating the SNMP, something simple like that, taking that Miko, writing a Python script. And this was just like a 50 lines of code of logging into the device, changing the SNMP, write mail, if successful, exporting it to an Excel spreadsheet. If failed, tell me in the Excel spreadsheet if it failed so I can go back and look and see why it failed.
I got you.
And so you just find things that you want to automate, find problems that you want to automate and go from there. And don't make it too complicated. Keep it simple.
When you said that SNMP thing, my last job before Juniper, they gave me like, all right, I don't know if it was hundreds of devices. I forget how many, but it's the same thing. We needed to update the SNMP location. You know, a new standard came out. Like, we got to change all the, and you know, me, I'm old school, Notepad++, just writing them out, SSHing in. And I'm like, I can't log into 350 devices and do this. It'll be impossible. And I was working with a guy on the Python script to, I mean, it's just magical, right? And even AJ, he showed me that Ansible thing last year. And he stood up a whole infrastructure of like 20 routers in like 5 minutes. I'm like, whoa, yep. That would have taken me a month. Like, what just happened? So You know, I keep chipping away is all I'm saying. And it's, I appreciate people like you, people like AJ, that, you know, advocates really for automation, for development, like, because I need people to remind me like, hey, you can do it too, man. Like it's hard, but just chip away. And cause sometimes I feel like that freshman in college, like, yo, I don't know, man. You know, we're back to software development and I failed out of that once. How can I do it now 20 years later? You know, but there's so many resources now and classes yep. and people like you and YouTube videos and, you know, sandboxes, right? And it's just so much out there. It's great. And books. We've got John Capobianco and Eric Cho and just so many people in the community that are helping, giving their time.
Yep.
So one thing too is a theme that I've said across a couple of these episodes when we've talked about network automation is, for me, what has helped me in at least getting somewhat started in it is finding a pain and, you know, it, something that's a pain for me in my network that if you have to do it, now you have to, you know, SSH into just multiple devices and do the same exact config over and over again, that kind of thing. So you hit on that when you said, you know, you had a, would you say, was it 3,000 devices or something like that?
It was 300 devices.
300 devices, yeah. But one I didn't even think about, and I don't know why I didn't think about this, but you just hit it, was like something like your lights. That's outside of networking altogether, right? But it's a fun project that you can do around the house or you know, within your studio there, and you still learn how to automate that at the same time. So yeah. I didn't even think about that, but that doing something like a fun project would, you know, help with that. I'm glad you pointed that out.
Yeah. I've done a ton of fun projects. Like the whole 2020, I automated most of my Twitter. I wrote a Twitter bot. And so that most of my Twitter worked for me.
No way.
Yeah.
Hold on a second. This is what I need to do, guys.
Dan's back on Twitter now. And now he doesn't even have to do it himself.
See, now here I thought Tuan had been engaging with me on Twitter all this time. Yeah. I'm talking to the Lab Everyday bot.
He's got canned answers just for Andy questions that he knows.
Yeah. We're probably talking to a hologram right now, automated with a Python script.
I'm going to get a text from AJ being like, what the hell was that tweet, man? Like, what are you talking about?
Get so on there, my we've bot's got, gone like crazy. We've got a few questions here, Duan, in the Patreon chat. But before we get to that, you just mentioned that a lot of those coding projects were just kind of home projects, things around the house. You're a father. Do you pull your kids into that? Are they interested in that kind of thing?
Yeah. So with my kids, we sat down and we did a couple games together, but when we did it, I think my son was what, 6, 7? Yeah, he was 7 and my daughter was 9. And so teaching them Python at their level is hard. So, yeah. And what I mean by that is,
I'm 33 years old. I can't figure it out. Yeah. I'm a grown ass man, Duan.
Right. They're visuals. So if we're doing things in command line to show them executing and we're doing little math games and stuff like that, they're like, oh, that's cool, but they get bored. And so what I did was I enrolled them in this program called Code Ninjas. And so they have this program in there called, what is it called? Scratch. I believe it's called Scratch. And so it's like this series of puzzles that are if statements to kind of teach kids the concept of coding, but at a way that they can understand it. So let's say you want to create a game. You take these if statements and you take these little puzzles. If this, that, then the pong ball will start bouncing on the screen. You know what I mean? So
okay.
I enrolled them in there so they can kind of learn coding from that. But I moved on for that because I'm really focused on their education. So right now I got them in tutoring for like math and English. Well, math and reading, whatever. So mainly focus on that in sports and all that stuff.
Gotcha.
Awesome.
Thank you. I'm going to check out Code Ninjas for my kids.
Yep.
Yeah, it's
let's go over to the Patreon chat here. We've got a three-parter here from Smiling Chris and Traffic Network. And it goes like, so what's your favorite technology that's out there now? What's your favorite legacy technology? And what do you think's the most exciting thing coming up?
that's a tough question because there's so much, you know, before. In my last network engineering role, I was really excited about data center technology. I was also excited about Palos and Panorama and all that. And just network engineering as far as like enterprise and edge routing and service provider networks. But right now I would say it would be the cloud. That would be the most exciting thing for me just because it's so new to me. You know what I mean? And when you think about how hard network engineering is, and now we're extending this into from your on-premises to the cloud, and we're talking about VPCs and we're transit gateways and all of this, and everything is just different. You know what I mean? So that's the most exciting thing for me, and seeing how this will evolve. Okay, are we going to keep our on-premises, or are we just going to have cloud? Everybody's going to be in the cloud. And then when you think about that, it's like, okay, we're spinning up EC2s, but wait, with this, we have these serverless applications that are just instances, you know, spins up, does a job and is gone. It's not even a, you know, an EC2. So that's exciting to me. And then when you break down these VPCs and how developers are developing in the cloud and how network engineers have to support their on-premises, the cloud, monitor all these networks, think about the security. It's complex, it's hard, and I'm excited.
Yeah.
Nice.
I love it.
It is complex and it is hard. I can tell you that the place that I just came from are in multi-cloud and on-prem, and man, it's a lot. You know, when something doesn't work, you're like, dear God, where do I look? Like, what isn't working where? And, you know, so the speed of the cloud is amazing. I've told this story before, but when COVID hit, nobody could get on the VPN. Everybody went home. We were not set up for that on-prem. And overnight, they worked with the cloud provider and got all of it spun up overnight. And we never had another problem with VPN. I mean, it would have taken us forever to order all that gear and upgrade the server, you know, blah, 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 blah. Like all the, it takes forever to do stuff on-prem, I feel like. And so that speed, man, is like, you know, you could just spin something up instantly, the serverless, like you said. But it's not, I didn't find it to be simple. I thought, and each provider, you know, they have their own terms, they do their own thing, they got their own, it's pretty intense. It's super awesome, but we need people like you to like help us navigate that, right? Because it's not easy. I didn't find it to be easy.
I'm still learning. Like, yeah, this is all new to me too. So we're all learning together. And that's like the exciting thing because I love network engineering. Like, I'm really passionate about network engineering, but we're in this, the pandemic has changed the dynamics of being a network engineer. Yeah. Like, it is really changed on how we move forward, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So Dewan, you touched on emerging technologies and you're a mentor. So let's put on your mentor hat for a minute. I need a volunteer from the co-host panel here. Who can we pick on?
Oh boy. You can pick me.
AJ, talk first.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Dewan, AJ is brand new. Let's say he's just thinking about getting into IT. He doesn't
thought this was a scenario.
I'm sorry, AJ. I'm not trying to hit close to home here. No, AJ can knock me out of the water any day technically. So AJ's just starting out. He wants to dabble in IT. He doesn't know where to start. What would your advice be to AJ?
So this is a tough one because the foundation of everything we talked about, whether it be on-premises, in the cloud, wherever you're developing, whatever you're doing is networking, right? The foundation of every tool we use is networking. We wouldn't be doing this live stream if it wasn't for networking. Yeah. So I think understanding TCP, understanding DNS, understanding DHCP, understanding like the principles of the why of how we communicate and ports and services is important. But I also think learning the code is something that like spans the length of time, you know, because you got developers that's been around forever, you know, that you got COBOL developers that are probably making the most money in the industry right now.
Yes. Yes.
So I think learning to code, if you're really passionate about that, is important. I think it's going to be even more prevalent as we move forward throughout, you know, the next 5 years. But it's all about what you really want to do. So I would ask some questions about what you're interested in and then help you navigate to where you can land a role in IT. Now, when we talk about landing a role, I used to say certifications is the route, but me as a mentor, I have a lot of resources and connections. And so if you're willing to put in the work, let's say you get the A+ or the CCNA, or you're just working towards and you've been working really hard, sometimes that's enough to get you to interview. And then through relationships, at that point, you know, somebody will give you an opportunity. You know, it's been so many times just by sharing somebody's interested in tech on LinkedIn that they've landed jobs just by me sharing on LinkedIn. You know, I got a guy right now. He's got his he was working on his A+, and I'm like, man, if you want to get to CCNA, just work on the CCNA. You know, he was like in a call center or something, and so he started working on the CCNA. And then I'm like, well, let's apply for jobs now so you can get some experience interviewing and see what that's like. And when he gave me his list of jobs, I had him pick out 25 jobs that he was interested in the local area, et cetera. So he can start understanding not only job titles, but job descriptions and understand what tech jobs look like. And we kind of talked about it. And so one of the jobs that he was going to apply for, I knew the hiring manager. So I'm like, you know what? Let me reach out to this hiring manager since it's an entry-level position and see if we can get you an opportunity. I reached out to the hiring manager, connected him on LinkedIn, and he got hired. And so I think in this industry right now, people are not as introverted when it comes to helping people get opportunities. And I think hindering yourself by thinking, okay, Dwan says get certifications, take this route, get this job, get this entry-level job and become a network engineer. That's not the same path for everybody. You know, there's a million different opportunities. So I will really focus on what they're interested in and then seeing how I can help them in that direction.
So my question wasn't a right or wrong type question, but you answered it correctly. and for a couple of reasons, I really appreciate, and I think we all do here because we've all got network backgrounds, but the first part of your answer was recommending that people have at least a broad understanding of networks, because I know on the enterprise side, we constantly sit in meetings. We're constantly pulled into projects because we're the highway, right? We build the highway, we connect the applications. Mm-hmm. So we build that, not only that network knowledge, but we build the business knowledge because we're constantly being brought into that. So you don't only learn networking, but you learn about the different applications. You learn about the business itself as being a network person. So I really appreciated that. And then also the fact that you said you ask questions and listen. You really want to know what the person's interested in to kind of guide them on the right path. And then you use the tools that you already have, the relationships that you've already built, to go the extra mile for the people that are putting in that extra mile to help themselves. So that I love it. That's awesome.
Thank you.
I want to piggyback off Tim real quick and ask you an unfair question, Dwan. So I apologize up front.
Oh boy.
Well, no, it's almost like the physical versus virtual lab question, but it's not, right? So I saw the idea of that person that's getting started out, like Tim had mentioned, and it's always been CCNA. I mean, for the 10 years I've been around. And I kind of sensed a shift in some of the answers when people asked that, replaced by DevNet Associate. So the unfair question, and I think you might have answered it in your last answer, but you know, if you want to get started out, let's pretend we're not going to ask them what their interests are. Like, these people need a job and you know, and they'll do anything. Do you think because everything's going programmatic, you know, do you still start with CCNA to get the foundational network knowledge and then go for DevNet Associate? Because you have to learn the programmatic stuff today. Is DevNet Associate enough maybe to get like a job in IT? I don't know if it's a fair question to ask, but is the DevNet Associate gaining traction as a great entry-level IT cert to get a job? You know, similar to CCNA has been forever.
Yeah, I can't answer that part, but what I can answer is that when you look at the CCNA, 80% of it is focused on networking, 20% of it is focused on automation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. DevNet, 20% is networking, 80% is automation.
It's flipped. Right.
Mm. So I mentioned before, the foundation is networking.
Yeah.
And so you can't automate what you don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm never going to tell anybody what to do, but I think the CCNA is still you know, the route that I would take personally, because, you know, getting that foundation in networking is going to carry you way longer in your career, you know, regardless of the way APIs are presented, regardless of the tools that are out there, the foundation of networking to this day is still ringing true. I mean, I took my first IPv6 class like in 2004. You know what I mean? We're still dealing with IPv4. So,
are we ever going to go to V6, Juan?
Yeah. I mean, we're using it. It's in use, yeah. But it's not, you know, IPv4. I think just because of the inherent security of private, you know, private networks is. It's going to be around in our
I think the last time I checked, we're at 35% global adoption of V6. Standards have been around decades. Like, I don't know what it's going to take.
Global adoption. Okay. So does that mean dual stack, or does that mean totally IPv6?
Well, that's a good, that's yeah, a good,
it's a fair question.
That's a good point to bring up. Yeah.
Hey, A1 fans, AJ here to remind you about NordVPN.com. NordVPN will help secure you wherever you go. I use NordVPN on all my personal devices. Whenever I'm out and about, I just go into the NordVPN app, hit quick connect, and away I go. Nice and secure. Don't have to worry about prying eyes, anybody looking at my connection. If I choose to go work from a coffee shop locally, or, you know, even while I'm traveling, if I bring my personal devices, I will use NordVPN to help keep things safe and secure. I'm using NordVPN right now, and there's no degradation in my signal. Everything looks good when you guys watch us on the live streams. So I can't say enough good things about NordVPN. They have some great additional services included with their VPN product. They'll scour the dark web for your credentials and see if they've been involved in any sort of hacks or anything. And then if they have, they'll let you know, and you can go change your passwords and do whatever you need to do to help keep yourself safe and secure. They also have a mode that will block any websites or ads known to possess malware, and they just have general ad blocking anyway, because, you know, who wants ads? as I record an ad. Anyway, if you want NordVPN, and you do, go to nordvpn.com/TAONE for the Art of Network Engineering, and you can get a really great deal, 73% off 2 years plus 4 months free. So again, that's 73% off 2 years plus 4 months free of NordVPN. If you forget that URL, just go to nordvpn.com at checkout. You can use the promo code TAONE for the Art of Network Engineering, and we appreciate your support as well as NordVPN support of the Art of Network Engineering podcast. Now back to the show. I want to kind of piggyback off a point you made earlier, Duan, and I think something that I've noticed since I started blogging and interacting with folks on Twitter, it seems like there's somebody out there looking for someone just like you. And if you don't put yourself out there and kind of make it known to the world what your intentions are, they're never going to find you, and you're never going to find them. Right. Cause I look at a lot of people within our community, and, you know, I've seen them take much bigger steps than I've taken just in an even shorter time. And Chris Randall comes to mind, right? Like he's only really been on the social media scene for like the last year, year and a half, and he has made some killer moves just by stating to the world, I'm trying to change careers. I want to learn this. I want to learn that, or I'm actively learning this, or I'm actively learning that. And so that's some of the biggest advice I give to people, is just put your journey out there, share with the world what you're doing. Somebody else is learning just like you, and maybe you're going to put something out there that helps them, you know, learn something they're trying to learn. So, not that we need more content creators competing in this area. No, I'm just kidding.
There is no competition.
No. I know. Yeah, absolutely not.
And so when you talk about putting your content out there, inherently, it's like an online like resume that has like passive like dividends on your career. So if you're learning towards your CCNA, when you apply for these jobs, the thing that may help get you over that hump is the fact that they actually can see your technical chops from you putting content online, you know, or sharing on LinkedIn, or having your own blog post. That means you just are a little bit more serious about your career, and they may trust you a little bit more, or they're just interested to help you grow. You know what I mean? But if somebody is just submitting a resume, all they see is a resume.
Right. Right. Whereas like the blog is like a much more detailed version of your resume. You know, it's one thing to sit there and say, I can communicate with my peers, but it's another thing to put out a blog post, you know, describing how you tackled an issue and how you solved a problem.
Right.
And AJ, I
think it's that combined with just a hiring manager knowing that you were willing to put in the time to do that. I equate the same thing to certification. So certifications show that you were able to obtain and retain this knowledge to be able to pass the test. But we know that, and especially Cisco certifications, is that these blueprints are massive, and there's a lot of things that you need to go through and make sure that you understand, and that takes time and effort.
Yeah.
So I think it's not only just the certification or just the content you're putting out, but the fact that you're taking it serious enough to put the time in. Because Andy's talked about it all the time. Time is the most valuable thing that we have. And the fact that you're willing to do that, I think, speaks volumes to a lot of people.
I want to play devil's advocate.
Uh-oh.
I used to think the same way when it comes to time. But what I found is that the most valuable thing that we have is our energy.
Ooh, that's a new one.
And the reason why I say that is, like, we can't control time. Things happens in our life. But where we place our energy, we can control that. And so when you're working on these certifications and when you're trying to learn and you're trying to grow your career, you really have to focus on where you put your energy, you know, because you may manage your time all day, but some of those things that you are giving your time to, you probably shouldn't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the level of effort.
Towards it too. Right. That's kind of what you're getting at, right?
Say that again, Dan.
So are you saying like the level of effort that you give towards, like, you can, like, if you took an hour of your time to go over a Python class, right, but you didn't put a lot of effort into it, so you didn't get much out of it. Is that kind of the path that you're going down there?
That's kind of it. It's more so, let's say you manage your day you manage from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. You wake up, you get ready for work. How many times are you checking your email? How many times are you replying to Twitter? How many times are you doing whatever that's not helping you on your day? Because if you look at Twitter and you put your energy in that, you may see a post that just messes up your whole day. Or somebody may reach out to you and it just messes up your whole day, or whatever may happen, right? So putting your energy there can be detrimental. It may have took a few seconds, but it lasts 30 minutes, an hour, or 8 hours in your whole day. So it's all about where do you put your energy, and being cognizant, deep work, thinking about thinking about how you apply your energy in your life and then managing that appropriately.
I like that a lot because that's something that I've tried to change how I think about things in the last couple of years. Because before, I'd always say, what's the easiest phrase to say if you don't want to do something? Oh, I don't have the time for that. So what I've tried to kind of flip it in the last couple of years is, rather than saying I don't have time for that, I'll say I'm not willing to put the energy or the time into that because of other things. So yeah, I really like that. The where you put the energy is even more important than the time you're putting in. I like that a lot, Dawn.
The energy, the focus, the attention, right? It's all where you're spending your time too. I think they're a little bit related. And Cal Newport, that's such a good book, because if I ever tallied up all the time I've just burnt doom scrolling Twitter, or, you know, looking up whoever on Facebook, just all the nonsense, right? Watching, like, trying to get TikToks, that dopamine, right? Hit. Yeah. Oh, look, somebody liked my barbecue rib picture. Yay. Like, it, you know, makes me feel good for a second. But I'd probably be a triple CCIE by now if I dedicated that attention to something that had a better return on investment than just helping the social media platforms drive up their, you know, advertising price because they got more of my attention.
Man,
Andy, can you say that, Andy?
What?
Can you say that word anymore?
Which word?
CCIE.
Oh. Oh, that's cold.
I'm just curious.
And Dan, what you said a second ago, I am patiently anticipating the start of Andy's TikTok.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be a beautiful thing.
Oh my God. After talking to Dwan, I think Andy's I might delete.
What the hell is a TikTok? a talk tick.
I know TikTok, man. I check out She Network. She's the bomb. I might go delete all of my social media stuff because every time I circle back to this and I'll check out Cal Newport, his book's sitting right over there. And then I see it behind Dwan. I'm like, man, it just holds me accountable. Like I waste so much of my time on. I lie to myself and tell myself I'm promoting the podcast. Or like, oh, you know, I got to be on there because I got to promote episodes. But I don't think it would make a dent if I disappeared off of social media. I think we do just fine.
Man, you know, I think if I would have never started social media, I would be a CCIE right now.
That's what I'm saying. Mm. Or a JNCIE.
Like, I literally got my CCNP as a system administrator. Work, yeah. You know what I mean? Not even doing network engineering, yeah. I got my CCNP.
Yeah.
So I think, and I do my best to really focus and lab every day, but when you're on social media, there's so many distractions of the things you should learn. Learn this right now. No. Do this right now. You know, this is the latest technology and it looks really cool. And sometimes we get baited in and then we get down these rabbit holes like, yo, I should learn Python, but we're not even doing that on our jobs. You know what I mean? So it's one of them things to where when I worked in my last network engineering role, I literally had to say, you know what? I'm going to talk to my manager and I'm going to split up my time 50-50. I'm going to do 50% automation in a day and I'm going to do 50% network engineering and I'm going to block off my calendar. I literally had to tell my manager that and they were okay with that. Once I gave them the blueprint of what I was going to do. So my day was broken up to 50% network automation, 50% operations, and then somehow I was still managing projects in there. But I didn't take it away from network automation because that was the most important thing for me, and I knew it would have the most impact on the organization.
Mm. Gotcha. Mm. That's huge that they gave you the bandwidth to dedicate to that because it's easy to say, hey, everybody learn automation at work. But if you got people doing 12 hours of work in an 8-hour workday, when are they supposed to do that? So it's huge, getting buy-in from the org. That's all. It's big.
Operations is tough. Right. Operations can be brutal. Like it can be brutal. But at some point you have to say no.
Yeah. Right.
Yep. I think the blocking out your calendar might be the best in that scenario. But like you were saying earlier, what was the number you gave? Like you were saying you get like 30 tickets a day or something like that. When you have stuff like that going on and then you had to update 300 devices on SNMP and whatnot, it's so hard to justify it's so hard for me to justify to myself that it's like, all right, I'm going to take this hour and a half to just tinker with some of this automation, you know, learning something that's specific to my job role. But if someone starts, you know, hitting me and see nowadays, like it's worse because we have, you know, like Teams or, you know, whatever people use Slack or anything like that, but the instant messaging, right? Because, you know, back in the day when it was just mostly email, you can push emails off a little bit. You know what I mean? You can kind of like let those build up a buffer a little bit. But when it starts coming to instant message and they can see that you're online and that you're available and that you're active, it's harder to push those back a little bit. So what I'm getting at is it's hard for me. I struggle with this at work to block off that amount of time to tinker with something when I have stuff pinging me and like, hey, we have this issue, or hey, can you make this change for me because I'm stuck on whatever I'm doing until you make that change. It's hard for me to block that out and feel like, you know, well, I'm doing this for the better of the company. Does that make sense?
It does.
Dan, are you becoming a grumpy old man? You said back in my day before there was IMs and all these instant messages, but now today with these kids and their IMs and Teams and what just happened to you? Get off my lawn.
I don't know. You're rubbing off on me, Andy. What the heck? So
there's a couple ways to approach this. Now, some organizations, if they're not that large, if they're small and you are like the only network engineer, then those burn people out. You know what I mean? Let's be honest. Those those type of operations.
Chris Denny. Sorry.
Those type of operations where you don't have any support, you can't take any days off, those can burn people out. But if you are in an organization to where there are other engineers out there, one of the best things you could do is ensure that everyone trusts everyone on the team. Mm. You know what I mean? And that can be done through training. That could be done through, you know, different outings or whatever you need to do to build that trust. But building that trust on a team will help understand everybody's strengths. And then the workloads, because of course you're going to have the engineer that everybody goes to. But what would happen if you said no? Or what happened if you didn't reply? Would you get fired? Or would somebody else do it?
Okay.
No, I'm saying, would you get fired or would somebody else do it? Would they reach out to somebody else?
Yeah, I think eventually they're going to reach out to somebody else, right? I don't think I'd get fired for it.
Right. Especially if you communicate with your manager. Say, hey, you know, I want to focus on this task and I want to work on operations, but this will add a ton of value to the organization if I can just complete this project or if I could just learn this automation. So let me block off this time in my calendar, work out with your manager, understand your team. Everybody in your team may not like it, and that's okay because at this, you're trying to help the team and you're trying to help the organization. And that's why I said you can bring in training, because at that point, if you're learning automation, you can invite your team to be a part of your journey and everybody grow together. But everybody's not going to want to take that route, and that's okay too. So communicate with your manager to say, hey, 20% of my time, I'm going to block out, let's say on Thursdays from noon to the rest of the day, I'm going to focus on this. If it's not a severity one, then I'm going to focus on this. And
okay,
your manager may say no, and that's okay too. So then you got to be creative. Do you come in early? Do you stay late? Or do you just not respond to those IMs because you're not, what if you're working on somebody else, something else? How do they know that you are right there and can respond right now? How do they honestly know that?
Right. I guess they don't. Yeah.
I shut my teams down. Like I shut all that down when I'm doing deep work. I have to, because I will respond to every IM, because I don't know if our brains are wired for that. And that's why all this stuff is so distracting. But as soon as I see a light or a ping or a ding, I'm like, uh-oh, somebody needs me. And to your point, Twan, like they can wait. It's not that important. Like I'm not that important. Right. But there's something about that pull, that draw, like, ooh, I got to, like, even working from home, right? When I went remote, I really felt the need to, like, oh, I better respond to IMs real quick because they won't think I'm working and I want them to let me work from home. It's like pre-COVID. But yeah, and you got to defend your calendar too. Like you said, if you're blocking time out, because I've been guilty of that as well. I talked to my boss last job and, you know, hey, you know, every Tuesday from 1 to 3, I'm going to work on such and such. Stuff would get booked, other calls would come in, or I would just try to catch up on other projects. And I never studied for that thing I was supposed to because I wouldn't defend my calendar and I didn't prioritize. You know, it takes discipline. Like Tanaya comes to mind. Like you got to have discipline and do the things you don't want to do and say no to yourself. And that's not easy sometimes.
Man, I'm going to tell you a story. I'm going to be totally honest. My first senior network engineer role, I thought I was ready. I thought I had it all figured out. One of my first outages that I had, there was a router had intermittent traffic, right? And so I'm troubleshooting and I'm not seeing anything going on. I'm not seeing nothing, no ACL hits. I'm not seeing anything in the logs. The only thing I'm seeing is an issue with the router. There's some type of bug in this router, this code, and it's an old router. It's end of life, right? So my idea was let's replace the router. Let's get a new router out there, right? Well, I was just trying to do something to get something done. It turned out to be an ACL that was being hit. I just didn't see it, right? Mm-hmm. Router didn't need to be replaced. That was a huge mistake on my part. And it cost, you know, a couple of days of, although we had traffic on one side, we didn't have traffic on this other side. But what I learned from that, after talking to the architect, he was like, you know, the difference between an engineer and a senior level engineer is that senior level engineers respond. Entry level and low, like level two engineer, network engineers, they react. You know, there's something going on with the network. The interface is bouncing. Well, let's start no shutting the ports. Let's start bouncing the ports. Let's start doing all this without asking questions, without doing all the research and all the things you did. And so when it comes to being a senior level engineer in your organization, you're in control of that. You decide how you're going to respond because they trust you to know how to handle and manage the infrastructure. And so you really have to approach your job to say, okay, these are the priorities that are important to the business. And so if your priorities on your role are aligned with that, you're in communication with your manager and your team, from that point, you just block off your calendar, respond however you need to.
Right. Yeah.
I think that would be a discussion that we need to do in the future sometime. What the difference between like an, you know, an associate or, you know, a junior or something like that versus a senior. Do a little bit deeper dive on that.
And I don't know if it's the same for everybody, but it's hard for me when things break, and it always has been, even when I had senior in my title, to slow down and work the problem and stay calm. Because like you're saying, Dewan, you want to do something, right? The building's burning down. There's a bridge. Executives want it fixed. People are losing money. Well, shit, I got to do something. And that's not, you know, majority of the time, you got to slow down. You got to, like the real heavy hitters that I've had the pleasure of working with over my career, they seem to just do the same thing every time. They know what to check. They have a checklist. They go through it. They're calm when people are freaking on the bridge. And it's something I've always tried to work on is to stay calm in an outage. Because if you're not calm, you're going to miss stuff and you might react because you just want to do something, at least to show that you're trying, you know, and that's rare. In my experience, that's rarely been the right thing. Like, just need to slow down and be calm. And I don't really know how to do that when you're surrounded by chaos. I don't know if it's a personality thing or if that's a skill, you know?
You got to manage that chaos.
Yeah, you're right.
You got to manage the chaos. I mean, it's tough. It's hard. But I think experience is a great teacher to learn how to manage that chaos. The more you are in the fire, and that's another thing about network engineering. There's a lot of times you will work on a team and people cherry pick tickets, right? That's like really a thing. And so the ones that dive into the fire are the ones people go to. So if you really want to go as a network engineer, you got to lean into the fire.
When I started at the Comcast NOC, it was terrifying and I had no idea what I was doing. And I had been a cable guy previous to that. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm in over my head. So the first few months I avoided the fire because I'm like, I don't know what that is. I've never seen that. And then my buddy Mansoor, I work next to, he kind of was like, yo, bro, you need to, if something scares you here, you need to just jump in because you're always going to be scared of something here. It's a huge network. And and that really changed my perspective and my success there. I just started jumping into anything, no matter how hot it was. 300 alarms come in Spectrum. You know, there's people who would be like, oh, I got to go to the bathroom. know? Like you said, like I'm not going in that. But the more I jumped in the fire, the less scared I was of the fire. Like, okay, this is just, you know, you can't sit at a knock where your job is to fix stuff and be afraid when stuff breaks. But I was. And you're right, that experience and having a senior guy next to me just guide me along. Like, here's what you need to do, man. I used to be like you. I'm like, all right, that really helped, you know?
Man, I used to be scared, like terrified to do like ACLs on like an edge device. Like terrified I would put it in the wrong direction and I let the entire internet into the organization. Like I used to be so terrified of that. But I mean, you lean into the fire, you figure it out, you lab it up at home, you talk to senior level engineers, you draw it up on a whiteboard, you do everything you can to learn it, to feel that pain, make mistakes, learn from them and grow.
It's hard to be new, right? Like you're doing everything for the first time and studying something or taking an exam is a hell of a lot different than sitting in prod pushing the button like, damn, I mean, I think this should work. And I talked to somebody about it, but it's hard to be new because everything you touch, you could break stuff, you know, and that's terrifying. It was for me, at least. Yeah. The first big job I did, Dewan, I broke a tunnel. I overrode a tunnel policy to a big financial client up in Manhattan. And you know the bitch of it? I didn't know tunnels had 24-hour timers, at least these did. So I overwrote this policy, and when the tunnel tried to renegotiate 24 hours later, it broke and they were hard down. And everybody I sat next to the knock and everybody scrambling saying like, yo, you're the last to touch us. I think this might've been you. I'm like, yo, that was yesterday, man. It can't be me. Cause I had no idea that you could make a config change and have a 24-hour grenade waiting for you. You know, it's the stuff you learn when you're new. Yeah. Yeah. Stuff to be new, man. And fortunately I had good leadership. They protected me. Man. People were pissed. Their CEO golfed with our CEO and it got bad. But leadership protected me. I was a contractor with a 6-month-old baby at home that took a risk, you know, and they protected me. So that's huge too, right? Not that we're talking about that, but when you're going to take that first job and you're not really sure how to do the job and somebody gives you a chance, if there's any way to vet the culture there, that are they going to, you're going to break something. Are they going to protect you and shield you when you do? Because they could have easily been like, oh man, it's that new idiot, man. He's out. It wasn't us. It's cool, you know, to protect themselves from the fire.
It happens, man. I think it's happened to everybody where you make a huge mistake or you miss something that you shouldn't have missed. It happens. Nobody's perfect. And I think that's one of the major needs for automation is to, you know, kind of make our jobs a little easier as a network engineer because it can be really challenging. You know, fat fingering configurations, there's some bytecode in your notepad as you copying it over to a router, breaks your whole configuration. Like, I mean, there's so much that can happen, you know, in this being a network engineer, and mistakes are, I don't want to say common, but they happen to all of us.
That first time you edit a AAA config and lock yourself out of a remote device.
Yeah.
And your buddy's like, did you reload in 10? I'm like, what's that?
You know, I think it's one thing to have that kind of like fear, nervousness, anxiousness, whatever about, you know, making a change, learning something new, but it's what you do with that energy, right? Like you kind of spoke to that before. Like if you use that energy and put it into labbing something every day or trying to practice the scenario and make sure you're covering all your bases, like no one's going to fault you if you still screw up in the end. You tried to do your best and that's all anybody can ever ask for.
Yeah. I mean, we learned
from failure. We got probably the most important question of the evening from Chris. What is your favorite Outkast track?
Southern Playalistic.
There you go, Chris.
Cadillac Funky Music.
What do you do for fun? I know we're getting probably toward the end. You're going to get tired of us soon and be like, all right, guys. But, you know, we all know you from your career and your amazing climb and all your contributions and how you help people. Like, what does Dwan do when he's not developer advocating and networking? And you still rap?
Nah, I don't rap. I don't do. Nah. You know what?
No more
for
music.
The longest, I stopped having fun. Like, to be honest with you, like, my life got real depressing. Because all I was doing was labbing and like, I love helping people, but at some point when you're pouring out your cup, your cup gets empty. You know what I mean? And so I think over the pandemic really helped me realize that because in 2020, I was working for a hospital, a tech company that supported hospitals, right? And when hospitals were expanding their infrastructures, adding VPN concentrators and all of that, I was the engineer. I was standing up a lot of these networks. And so I was working from like 5 a.m. to like 7 p.m. every day because I didn't have nothing else to do. I would just work, do my job, do projects and code. And that was pretty much my day. And then I try to make YouTube videos or whatever. And then like that summer of 2020, my grandmother passed away. And that really put me like in a real depressing like state. And it's crazy because a couple of months later, I got hired by Cisco and you would have thought I would have been extremely happy. But I was really like empty on the inside for months. And it kind of helped me realize that I really wasn't doing anything to like be happy, you know, that outside of tech. And I think as people, it's easy to pour everything you got in tech because you want to advance your career. You want to provide for your family, but you still got to be human. You still got to have fun. And so I think I try to just take a step back and really spend more time with my kids, appreciate them, be thankful for life. And, just find things that I like. Like, I'm simple, man. I don't need much. And so if I can just like find a coding project, I'll be happy. if I can do something creative, paint with my daughters, or, you know, go somewhere with my son, play some sports, I'm good.
Mm. Yeah, that self-care is important, whatever it looks like. You know, to be tech will eat you up and spit you out. It did for me. And I, mm-hmm. I had a legit, I mean, I, you know, not a nervous breakdown, but I burn out hard around 2020. You know, I know a lot of people, that's why we did that mental health episode a while back, because people were just suffering. And I think people, like, I think you had alluded to, kind of had that experience of, it was almost like a life reset. You kind of had to step back and look at your life. Like, you know, am I happy? Am I doing what I want? What do I want to change? And it's been, I mean, I think that's a good thing. If anything good came out of all this, you know, mess, at least it made us kind of reevaluate. Because like you said, you just want to climb and build your career and make more money and, you know, help, you know, earn for your family, you know, whatever it is. And yeah, I mean, there was a point I was working the same thing, man, like way too many hours every day and neglecting the family, neglecting myself. There was no more, you know, taking care of me and doing fun things. And we are human and we need a balance. You can't just work and study and lab and create content all day for months and then, you know, feel good.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, it's tough. That's why I said, you know, I admire y'all because y'all can do this all together. Y'all can build with each other and, you know, lean on each other while you're creating content and doing what you're doing. So, you know, I do admire that.
Thank you. It's nice having a team. You know, we can share the load. It would have been a hell of a lot harder if it was just me talking to Dwan. You know what I mean? Tim comes up with something funny. AJ says something. We kind of... Yeah, it's nice, which is why I have so much respect for you that you've basically done lab every day, you know, YouTube all by yourself, hugely successful, so inspirational. And you know, it's just been amazing that it's been a one man show. So good on you. I've been a fan a long time and I really appreciate you coming on.
Thanks. Yeah, I think, you know, my platform has been a lot of me, but a lot of, you know, the community growth has been the community. You know, whether it's been a, mm-hmm. like with me involved or not, I think just because the nature of being in tech, people understand how much work it takes, how much work it takes. And a lab every day resonates, you know, with the community. So I think most of that is from just people wanting to, you know, just be a part and help others grow, you know, so.
I love it. I think that's a great point to start winding this one down. Dwan, thank you very much for joining us. Is there anything that we didn't ask about or talk about tonight that you want to mention before we sign off?
No, just thank you for, you know, having me on you all's platform and podcast. Keep doing what you all are doing, you know, talking about network engineering and how fun it is, how exciting it is, how hard it is something that's inspiring, not only to engineers in the industry, but engineers that are our future engineers as well. So salute.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And for anybody that's on our platform, that's maybe hearing you for the first time, where can people find you?
Lab Every Day on Twitter, YouTube, my website, labeveryday.com, and yeah, Instagram, and Dwan Lightfoot on LinkedIn as well.
All right.
I need a lab every day. AJ, can you get a Twitter poll going? Never mind. That's a terrible idea. Let's not do that. Last time we did that, we came up with a name for our goat and it just went off the rails. Dan got a good Twitter name out of it though. Good Twitter handle.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I'm on the fence. I'm happy with it.
Yeah. I don't think I'm gonna have that same luck, Daniel.
Yeah. Right. You never know. Awesome. I trusted the internet and it treated me nice.
You can't do that with everything. No. Well, again, Dwan, thank you so much for joining us. Shout out to our Patreons for hanging with us tonight. If you're interested in joining our Patreon program, you can go to patreon.com/artofneteng. And we'll see you back next week for another episode of the Art of Network Engineering podcast. Hey everyone, this is AJ. If you like what you heard today, then make sure you subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcatcher. Smash that bell icon to get notified of all of our future episodes. Also, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We are at Art of NetEng. That's Art of NETENG. You can also find us on the web at artofnetworkengineering.com, where we post all of our show notes. You can read blog articles from the co-hosts and guests, and also a lot more news and info from the networking world. Thanks for listening.